future.
There are no people.
There are no people in the future.
No people at all.
There are no people in the future.
Where did all my people go?
There are no people in the future.
Let me try my people call.
Welcome. It is Wednesday, November 17th, 2021. Welcome to the newest edition of Raging Chicken's collection of podcasts. Yes, it's the Wednesday show. It's the Wednesday show with Cyril Mikulenko. Cyril is a progressive columnist for the Bucks County Courier-Times, the Intelligencer. And this show joins Out the Coop Live, our Monday evening interview show, and our Friday politics roundup, in which Sean Kitchen and I break down the good, the bad, and the ugly in state and national politics. You can get all our shows by subscribing to our podcast on Podbean, iTunes, Spotify, wherever you get your podcasts. You should also make sure you're signing up for Cyril's newsletter over on Substack. That's cyrilmikulenko.substack.com. That's cyrilmikulenko.substack.com. Of course, just go ahead and click on the link in the show notes today, and I'll take you right there. You can also help support this show and all our podcasts by becoming a patron for as little as $5 a month. Just head on over to patreon.com/rcpress. Your support has helped make today's show possible. You can help out the show, too, by heading on over to our YouTube channel, if you're not there already, and smash that subscribe button, like the stream for this show, and hit that notification bell so you know every time that we go live. Make sure to sign up for our Discord server. Our Discord server is about to take off, so we've got some stuff that's going to be happening over our Discord server pretty soon. So head on over to the Discord server and kind of sign up for that, and you can continue this conversation all week long. Just click on the link in today's show notes. And a special shout-out goes to Jonathan Mann, who wrote our intro song, There Are No People in the Future. Check out all his great stuff on his YouTube page and follow him on Twitter at @SongADayMan with two N's. That's @SongADayMan on Twitter. Now, on this week's show, we'll be talking about Cyril's latest column in the Bucks County Courier-Times called Vanguard Group Must Stop Financing the Planet's Destruction. Yes, indeed. That is his latest over at the Bucks County Courier-Times. And Vanguard, what's Vanguard? Well, the Malvern, PA-based Vanguard is the largest global financier in coal with $86 billion in investments and the second largest in oil and gas. And you got some groups that are pushing back on this and want Vanguard to, you know, divest. We'll also take a look at what's been going on in the school board races. Because, you know, guess what happened? This week in the Bucks County School Board Wars got national attention as the New York Times podcast, The Daily, did a deep dive into the battles in the Central Bucks School District. We'll also check in to see what's happening over in Cyril's Substack newsletter and get a preview of what he's working on for upcoming columns. Yes, it's going to be quite a good show today, everybody. So thank you for joining us and welcome this morning, Cyril.
Hey, Kevin, how's it going?
Hey, well, I don't know how it's going, to be honest with you. It's been a little bit of a crazy kind of a couple of weeks here. Since the last show that we did, I'm not quite sure. I have moments of absolute kind of optimism and hope kind of about organizing going forward. On the other hand, it feels like the shit is hitting the fan all over the place. So I don't know where you want to put that on the kind of like the happy index. So
yeah, no rest for the weary in Bucks County, that's for sure.
Holy cow. Holy cow. Holy cow. Well, so today, I mean, you know, definitely I want to get into the Bucks County stuff, especially on the school boards in a minute. But first, I want to kind of dig into your column again. I mean, especially in the face of, or I should say in the wake of COP26, right? And we saw a fairly disappointing outcome, but I don't think entirely unexpected outcome of what came out of COP26. And I think that, you know, your column, I thought, really hit the right notes in terms of saying, okay, this is where the struggle moves to now, right? What is happening in our backyards where we can build power and have an impact? And your focus is there on the Vanguard group down in Malvern. So take us into that, what you're doing there.
Sure. Yeah. You know, with regards to the COP26, I wanted to kind of like localize the larger climate story and offer a way for kind of people to actually get involved with some nonviolent, you know, civil disobedience and activism in order to save our planet in the future. And, you know, I'd heard about Earthquake or Action Team years ago because a friend of mine, Jonathan Snipes, and he runs Snipes Farm with his family and down in Morrisville and Lower Bucks. He was involved with a campaign against PNC Bank over 10 years ago, and they were able to successfully kind of change the bank's lending practices, so they stopped lending for mountaintop removal. And so I saw recently that Equate, or Earthquaker Action Team, they started this new campaign called Vanguard's Problem. And what they're doing is they're just kind of, you know, they're using divestment, right, as a method to kind of, you know, change the firm's behavior, right, as well as to kind of like educate the public. You know, I interviewed this young activist, Eve Gutman, and, you know, what she said was that, you know, while it does have like a material financial effect, what's even more powerful is how it strips away the social license industries being divested from currently have. And Vanguard is the largest global financier in coal with $86 billion and second largest in oil and gas. And so, you know, the firms, and also according to a recent report by this group called Reclaim Finance, it's bankrolling 12 of the most devastating fossil fuel projects around the world. So I thought this was just, it was a good way to kind of like educate the public about like one of the issues and one of the ways that global finance is destroying the planet, while also showcasing, you know, the positive side of that coin, which is Equate and, you know, the groups that they're working with. And, you know, this like multi-generational interfaith, you know, activism that they're engaged in.
Well, you know, and I think that Vanguard, I thought, was a really interesting target too, as well, as part of this divestment, because just when you think about like the narrative here is like, well, why does your everyday person like might end up going to Vanguard? It might be through their work. It might be kind of personally they're investing for their future, right? For their retirement, for their kids' education. They're trying to kind of build some sort of nest egg, because, of course, in this country, we have no, you know, we have no way of retiring through kind of social thing. We have no pensions anymore. Right. So this is the way we do this. And so if people are kind of going to Vanguard, they hear it's a very reputable, you know, place to invest, and they're trying to do the best by their future. And yet we see their investment practices are putting that very future in danger. Right. So it's a really kind of interesting point of contact around the climate crisis, especially given what you just said about how big of investors they are when it comes to fossil fuels.
Yeah, I mean, that's exactly the point. And, you know, Vanguard's done a lot of good for a lot of people, helping them plan for the future. But what's that worth if this future is going to be like this dystopian hellscape?
Right? Exactly.
You know, that seems to be on the horizon, unfortunately, because of, you know, global inaction or indifference, both from like corporate actors and state actors. But this is like one way where just like ordinary folks can just kind of like get involved. Like you can still kind of make money from the market and engage in the market without kind of bankrolling these, you know, these destructive fossil fuel industries.
Yeah. And, you know, I was taken back through reading your article in terms of the strategies here, because, of course, the divestment campaigns are not new. Right. And they've been kind of historically have had real major impacts. Like, for example, we had the divestment in South Africa. I remember when I was coming up in college, I mean, the, you know, divesting in South Africa and targeting our universities to basically get them to try to divest their kind of investments and their endowments from, you know, any investment in South Africa that to prop up an apartheid regime. And we also see this, you know, when you're talking about exploitative practices around sweatshop labor, right? Wanting to kind of get universities or other organizations to stop investing in companies that are kind of participating in kind of brutal labor practices. And once again, it seems to me that the biggest challenge that we're facing here as a people really is climate change. And so by going after the money that's propping up these fossil fuel companies seems to be the appropriate place to go, especially on a local level where people can actually have a direct impact.
Yeah, I mean, I'm glad you brought up the kind of anti-apartheid campaign. You know, I mean, it's something like I would have liked to include it in the column, but, you know, I only have so many words that I'm allotted. But, it, you know, it it's important for people to kind of like know this history that's often neglected purposely and not taught. And the anti-apartment movement really changed the narrative. You know, their divestment campaign in the 80s and the universities across the country really changed the narrative around the Reagan administration's so-called strategic engagement, you know, with this, you know, rural and just violent apartheid regime in South Africa, you know, a policy or strategy that, you know, Desmond Tutu called immoral, evil, and totally unchristian. Right. And in fact, it helped change public opinion so much so that Congress actually they overrode Reagan's presidential veto in 1986 of the Comprehensive Apartheid Act, which actually imposed sanctions on the regime. So, you know, what we know is that this strategy has worked in the past and it's working now. You know, Bill, like I mentioned in the article, you know, I was noting something that Bill McKibben wrote in the New York Times. And he wrote that, you know, the fossil fuel divestment campaign has reached new heights. Endowments, portfolios, and pension funds worth just shy of $40 trillion have now committed to full or partial abstinence from coal, gas, and oil stocks. So again, there's the, you know, this two-pronged approach with divestment is one, you know, you're going to hit these companies where it hurts. But I think more importantly is just how it kind of educates the public, the broader public, and changes the narrative around the issues that you're targeting.
Yeah, and I think it really brings back the question of, you know, where people can have power in organizing around this stuff too as well. And I think that's so important moving forward right now, especially in the aftermath of COP26, but also in the wake of what we're seeing, some of the organizing that was going on during these, you know, these municipal election series around. And, you know, I would say that, you know, before the pandemic hit, I mean, the fossil fuel divestment campaigns, this was already been going on and had some notable victories. And like you said, what, you know, what Bill McKibben cited is there, some of those folks that have divested are people like Harvard University, New York City, the entire state of Maine, the Ford Foundation, right? The University of Oxford, the Rockefeller Brothers Fund. So there's been major successes in getting some pretty heavy players to divest from fossil fuels, right? And get off the pipe, so to speak, as a way of profiting over the destruction of the future. So I was thrilled. I mean, when I saw you kind of writing about this and I saw this article come out, it just felt like this is what we need in the wake of COP26 to say, where do we bring our energies? So we don't just walk away like, oh yeah, they said that they were going to do this stuff. Nothing really happened. There's no firm commitments. And look, the lesson to be learned is very similar, very simple. It's in our hands, right? There is no like white knight coming to save us. We're going to have to save ourselves. And now we've got a kind of direction for which to go. So kudos to you for doing this piece.
Hey, thank you.
Yeah. So, meanwhile, I don't want to get too hopeful here, right? Because I live in Bucks County after all. And I live in the Pennridge School District after all. And it has been a mixed bag about what's happened after municipal elections. Mixed bag in the sense we've got QAnon people are now sitting on school boards. You've got a further deepening of the kind of the right wing nut jobs that were actually kind of going to be controlling curriculum and masking policies and all this kind of stuff. And now we just saw this week, right, yesterday and today, the New York Times, their podcast, The Daily, which is like one of the most, you know, listened to podcasts in the world, right, The Daily actually had a two-part series focusing on Central Bucks school district and what happened there on the school boards. And it seems to me that, you know, I think it's right and appropriate that we're starting to get national media attention to what is happening in Bucks County because it seems so critical. So I'm really curious about your takeaways from The Daily podcast and what you see where the school boards are right now.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I thought the reporter did, you know, I thought he did a good job. It's a difficult story. It's a really like complex and almost epic story that he's trying to tell to a national audience,
right.
You know, about, you know, what's happening in Central Bucks and Doylestown, but you know, in the same respect, what's happening there is a microcosm for what's happening across the country. And you know, what we've seen is just this kind of you know, radicalization of local Republican parents, and how outside money and outside organizations have been able to use both masking and health and safety plans around the pandemic, you know, as well as DEI and anti-critical race theory hysteria, to whip up locals into like a rabid frenzy. And it's really just kind of reshaped the way that, you know, school board meetings are now run and handled. And, you know, I think, you know, we were talking about this earlier, and, you know, the part about Paul Martino is really just, it's a warning, right, to like everyone in Bucks County, because he's just getting started, right? Like this one issue kind of, you know, he was trying to say, and he's repeated this over and over again, that, you know, all they cared, their only litmus test was this one issue, right? Like, do you want schools reopened? You know, so apparently you could be a neo-Nazi, you know, as long as you let schools reopen, because we had QAnon folks, right? Like, that didn't bother him. He wasn't like, you know, I'm really glad that this one candidate, Gloria Landis in Palisades, you know, she wants schools reopened no matter what. But this whole QAnon thing maybe gives me a little pause. Maybe we should like not give her money and not support her, because, you know, this is who's going to be shaping curriculum. If you care so much about your kids' education and, you know, how you want kids in schools, which they are now, right? But you don't care that someone that's a conspiracy theorist and a bigot is shaping that education. That just doesn't add up to me.
Well, you see, Cyril, we're a one issue pack. Really, we're just focused on the reopen stuff, right? And that's basically what he said in the podcast. And, you know, one of the things that I found very interesting about that, too, he said the way he talked about it now, he said, OK, yes. Oh, we didn't really, you know, look at that. We just were focused on this one issue no matter what. And yeah, it happened to be that 70% of, you know, the funds ended up going to Republican candidates. Although the reporter basically comes in and says, well, it actually looks like when we looked around and actually what the candidates were, it was significantly lower than that as a percentage. But, you know, whatever. But it wasn't an ideological thing, whatever here. But look, this guy, you know, there was over $700,000 spent on school board elections on this term just in the area. And $500,000 of that came directly from one person, Paul Martino, right? And the way that he talked about what he did there, of course, was to say, okay, look what we did. We activated all these people. We got QAnon. We got all this stuff there. Now I, as the venture capitalist, I have an asset, and now I have to figure out how to deploy it. Right. And so when you just said this is just the beginning, that's, I mean, I think is the best place to end that podcast on. And just for listeners, for our patrons on our Patreon stuff, I'm going to be doing a little bit of a deep dive on this, on that podcast, particularly stuff on Paul Martino. So look forward to that kind of coming up there too as well. But I think that tells us a kind of a lot about where we're going, and that even though that there was, you know, the story begins in the podcast with parents being concerned about their kids' education, that how quickly, just like what happened with the Tea Party back in 2008, 2009, that very quickly turned into a very partisan, ideological, right-wing, well-funded effort that is now going to be deployed as a weapon moving forward for 2022 and beyond.
Yeah. And then so like the Democratic Party has to ask itself, what's its answer to this? Right. So, you know, the community also has to do that. And it's doing that now. Like you're talking about this, and we're seeing the organizing on the grassroots level, you know, to kind of like combat what the kind of like far right agenda that now these school boards are going to be able to push in certain districts in Bucks County, like your district in Penridge, as well as Central Bucks, because now they have a clear majority. And so, you know, if they don't start organizing now and start figuring out a way about One, you know, how they're going to combat this kind of dark, and I'm saying dark with a Q, because obviously we know who it's coming from, money, because, you know, Paul Martino, you know, does, he gets very offended if you say his money is dark money.
Yes, he does.
and so how they're going to counter that, but like more importantly, like, you know, how they're going to engage with and partner with the grassroots community organizing that's been going on and continues to grow as we speak.
Absolutely, 100%. And I think that, you know, I do have, you know, we talked about this with Laura Putnam on Monday's show, a little bit about, you know, some of the organizing. And this is where I do have a lot of hope in what's happening in the community, because there was some of the best organizing in a short period of time that I've seen in a long time happening around these school board races. And now, you know, if you will talk about Paul Martino wants to have the asset that he owns through his money, right? The relationships that are built, and this is an important point that Laura Putnam made on the show on Monday, was that, you know, when you come in, you spend a bunch of money, you spend the money and it's gone. Right. What matters is the relationships that's built. Right. And this is kind of the Democratic Party in the past has done exactly this. They come in and they say, OK, we're going to take a candidate. We're going to take thing, drop a bunch of money and then leave. But what is the organizing that's happening with these parents and community groups around the school board election is actually building those relationships. And they're actually asking the same questions like, how do we need to expand beyond just our school boards? We need to actually start connecting up across Bucks County. And so I really do think that the question is about how fast that's going to be able to scaled up, say countywide. But I do think that the practices are there, right? And the community has been doing absolutely bang up work in terms of, you know, preparing for what is to come and preparing for the fight, really.
Yeah, you know, and I think, I don't want to say it's a wake up call, but what the election results were kind of just like a reminder that it's going to take quite a commitment from folks to kind of be engaged 365 here, right? You know, people need to not only just kind of like vent and do like online, you know, digital activism or venting, but they need to like show up in person and like you say, like, you know, build those relationships, kind of like create and share the narratives of what a diverse and equitable and inclusive school and county and congressional district looks like.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that, you know, one of the things that was one of the most encouraging shifts that that I started seeing, at least in the Pennridge School District and some of the other kind of organizers and some of the other school boards that I had been in contact with, is seeing a shift from, you know, people who had come to that organizing maybe for the first time, shift away from being kind of like outraged or shocked at what's going on to realize that this is just our state of nature right now. I mean, this is the normal right now. So we've gotten past the kind of, I can't believe this, to now like, okay, what is it that we need to do in order to stop this? So, you know, again, I do think that's a good place to be in. But I mean, like you said, this is an all hands on deck moment, right? And we can't expect, okay, you know, a small group of like 5, 6, 7 people to kind of carry the water for the rest of us. But we got to show up and do kind of our part in what we can do. I know Cyril and I have been having some initial discussions about kind of what we do with this space and this kind of platform moving forward to try to kind of assist those efforts moving forward. We'll have more about that kind of coming up in the weeks to come. But that's it's a moment of creative possibility in my ways when it comes to organizing, and really the efforts, that's where the efforts got to go, right? Not in just kind of like, you know, sending off postcards or kind of like dumping money on political candidates, but building our own infrastructure and the organizing networks that we've got. So
absolutely.
Cool. So I know that you had I want to encourage everybody to head on over to Cyril's Substack too as well, because especially I think in the wake of your latest column, it's kind of like the bookends of the column, right? To kind of do some more deep dives on stuff, what was happening around COP26 and so on. And then you've got that full interview there with kind of Eve Gutman too as well, which is which I found absolutely fascinating.
Yeah, she was great, and you know, that's just like, you know, one of the one of the purposes or points or goals of the Meet a Progressive column is just to kind of do a deep dive with the not only the people I'm interviewing, but the people I'm getting to know and working with. Because I think, like, you know, there's something to learn from all our stories about, like, one, like, how we get into politics, how we approach politics and activism, you know, and what it is that we're actually working on. I know I had been doing or focusing on the, you know, quote unquote rogues gallery of the far right, but it's good to get back and to, you know, just like, you know, accentuate the positives and the good progressive folks that are doing amazing work, not just locally, but throughout the state and country and world.
100%. So, I mean, definitely, if you haven't already, definitely head on over to Cyril's Substack. You go cyrilmikolenko.substack.com. You can also search it up on Substack by Bucks County Progressive. Make sure you sign up for that newsletter. And I actually, one of the things I've been loving that you've been doing lately has been these little kind of like, hey, here's five climate stories to read, or here's kind of five articles to check out this week. That's proved to be kind of like a really excellent resource, I think, for, well, for me, certainly, but I think also for other folks who are reading the newsletter as a whole. So that's pretty good. So while we're actually kind of coming up kind of on time, you know, and I've got a freaking crazy little stuff that is happening on more meetings that are coming up and so on, I want to get a sense of what else Cyril's working on. We're having a little bit of a technical glitch right now, but I see Cyril is coming back on right now. Let's see if we get him back. Hey, Cyril, you back?
I hope so.
Excellent. All right, cool. So we'll make this one quick. Yeah, we've had some kind of internet issues today. So, let us a little peek into what you're working on for upcoming columns and stuff.
Sure. A couple of things. Like, first, for my newsletter, I'm working on a commentary about what happened at the most recent Central Bucks School District School Board meeting, where apparently, you know, anti-Semitism, transphobic hate and lies were not only allowed to be platformed, but essentially, you know, encouraged, you know, by the local Republican school board members. Who defended these two gentlemen's right to quote unquote free speech and seemed more angry by people who are outraged by the hate and bile and anti-Semitism that was being vomited by these two individuals. So, you know, I've been talking to people in the one who was there, a few others that were listening in online, just to kind of share like their thoughts about it. And you know, I think one thing that's come through from all this is that one, there needs to be an organized and kind of like creative community response to this. And two, business as usual and the status quo just isn't cutting it, because things are in Central Bucks School District with the far right radicalism and normalization and mainstreaming of it, where this most recent meeting was just a logical kind of like development or culmination of what's been happening over the last several months, if not year. So I'm hoping to get that up on the newsletter, hopefully tomorrow, Friday at the latest. Column wise, you know, I think it's time Bucks County had a conversation about systemic racism, right? If it's something that, you know, people either deny, like Joan Cullen, or just want to put their head in the sand. And you know, part of the problem is, you know, I think like Bucks County is 90% white, so it doesn't really impact people like personally, right? So that could be another reason why, you know, there's this kind of, you know, people are having doubts about whether, you know, that exists, you know, and a lack of education about it certainly doesn't help, which is what we're seeing these far right school boards trying to ensure by kind of removing certain texts, trying to completely obliterate any kind of diversity, equity and inclusion efforts. So that will be for next week. I contacted a professor from Penn State University, Cynthia Young. We had a nice hour-long conversation. So I'm going to put something together about that and possibly touch on a couple examples. The Sentencing Project put out a report last month, you know, about how Blacks, as well as Latinos, but were disproportionately in prison and in state prisons throughout the country, as well as the racial disparities in education, in discipline in schools throughout Bucks County. So the Bucks County Courier Times actually did like a really good article about that back in September. You know, and as I was reading, I was like, well, here's like a perfect example of like systemic racism, right? When you're seeing these Black children getting more severe punishments at greater rates, you know, than their white classmates. And we know that like kids are kids, right? You know, so, you know, and if it's not systemic racism, that would just mean the only alternative is that just like all the people that were kind of involved in this are racists.
Right, exactly, there you go.
So that, and then, you know, down the line, I recently, I was able to get, I was able to view a new documentary about the Berrigan brothers called Devout and Dangerous, which was just really amazing. And so, you know, I've been talking with one of the, you know, the media contact people, and, you know, either I'm going to talk with a director or maybe Frida Berrigan. We have to see who's available and like what their time's like. But that'll be down the line. I'm not sure if that'll be, you know, before Christmas, or it might just be right after the new year. But yeah, if there's a viewing locally, I really just encourage people to go see this this documentary about these two kind of radical, in the greatest sense, Catholic priests who just, you know, went to jail for justice and peace, right? And just were real role models, and is just really kind of championed what I'd like to say Catholicism, right, is about, right? Just like peace and justice.
There you go, man. Well, there you have it. And I think that's a nice way to kind of close out and get ready to go on a little Thanksgiving break, kind of coming up to thinking about peace and justice, the Berrigan brothers, right, and all the stuff they have going forward. That is definitely the spirit of the season. I'll give a couple quick comments too as well. What Cyril was talking about there about the Central Bucks meeting, there is a great piece by Meredith Gapsis. It's just a editorial that she wrote into the Courier Times about that meeting. People can check that out. That's a really good thing to get a little bit of a primer on it. And also, you know, this is the other thing about when you said we need to have a systemic, we have a conversation in Bucks County about systemic racism. And I think it's like, you know, I know this is not popular for some of the people that listen to my shows, but, you know, it's time for PSEA in Bucks County to get off the sidelines. I'm sorry. It's, you know, this is where, you know, playing back and kind of like sitting back and kind of playing behind the scenes just not working out. It's going to, I think the union is going to need to be out in front and saying and be very clear that it's going to protect teachers, both from, you know, the monitoring and the potential threats that are coming, but also taking a stance and making you say we stand up for all kids, right? Not just the ones that it's convenient to stand up for. So there's my two cents for there. Well, anyway, Cyril, yes, again, we got the meeting stacked end to end today, so we'll kind of close it out here. But man, it's always great talking to you. And if I don't talk to you before, I'll probably talk to you before then. But if I don't, you know, have a great Thanksgiving, and we'll see you on the other side.
Thanks, Kevin. Happy Thanksgiving.
All right, you got it. All right, this is Kevin Mahoney, editor and founder of Raging Chicken. Tune into all our shows. We got some great shows coming up. Out to Coop Live, Out to Coop Friday Politics Roundup. We'll see you around, everybody.
Let me try my people come.